Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
To remain open-minded and curious, I think it's having that proficiency to always want to learn, always want to get better, and not dismissing things too easily or being too set in your ways.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
You're now listening to The Coaches Network, a podcast aiming to bring people at the heart of coach and player development together. My name is Coach Yas, a UEFA A-licensed, FA Advanced Youth Award and FA Goalkeeper B-licensed coach. With over 10 years of experience working in youth football from grassroots right through to Premier League academies, I'm currently operating as an affiliate tutor for the FA alongside working towards a Master's in Performance Football Coaching. Today I'm going to be joined by my co-host and the Coaches Network Analysis Specialist, Coach Ben. Ben is a UEFA A-licensed coach who holds an FA Youth Award and a Master's in Sports Coaching, with 10 years of experience including working across the male and female youth development pathways, alongside a vast experience on individual, player and team performance analysis. And as part of our Insight series, we'll be joined by a range of individuals working across multiple disciplines within the coaching world in order to explore their journeys and dig deeper into their experiences, so that we can leave you with some golden nuggets to help you reach your full potential.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and today I'm joined by a very special guest today. He's the Academy Manager at Lincoln City, Jordan McCann. How are you doing, Jordan?
Yeah, good evening, Yas. Very well, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Brilliant. Jordan, I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to get straight into the heart of it. Where did your coaching journey start? You know, you're Academy Manager now, but where did it all begin?
Yeah, so quite a while ago. Now, Yas, when I was still playing, actually, I always took a real interest in how sessions were constructed and designed. So as far back as school, I actually had a little dabble at coaching when I was in doing my GCSEs, actually, at high school in year 10 and 11 with some of the younger players at school. So that was probably my first go of putting some cones and balls down and trying to find out what it was all about. And then a little bit more seriously, I suppose, later on, once I'd left, I was fortunate enough to go to university at Loughborough. And that's where I really started taking coaching seriously and exploring it from a variety of different angles.
And just on that note, you know, you talked about going to Loughborough. What was it that you studied there?
So I studied sport and exercise science initially as an undergraduate. Quite wide ranging in the first couple of years, and then specialised in my last year in pedagogy and coaching science. So, yeah, I was really fortunate to have three really productive years there across the disciplines.
Brilliant. And, you know, just touching there, you mentioned there that obviously going into uni and, you know, that it was a real almost stimulus and instigated kind of propel you into your coaching career from that point onwards. Am I just talking to you about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think first off, like I said, really fortunate that Loughborough is such an outstanding sporting institute across the board and had a real good insight into how a variety of different sports implement their development programme. So from across the Olympic sports, rowing, cycling, athletics, rugby, and just seeing what really good world-class sporting development looks like. So that was a real pivotal part of the time that I spent there. And then definitely from an academic point of view, there was, it really sparked my interest and some furtherance in coaching, that it wasn't just about, you know, diagrams and finding ways to put on sessions that flowed in a certain way. And that there was a lot of, you know, theory underneath it to be a really good practitioner. So yeah, it set a little fire off and from there, it really started to see coaching as a profession. So it was a fantastic period of my life.
So 3 years on, you know, moving into, you know, the whole pedagogy and coaching sciences element, successfully graduated, how did the coaching journey, you know, continue from that point onwards?
Yes, again, really fortunate. A coach that I'd worked with when I was playing was the youth team coach at Luton at the time. So once I graduated, I got back in contact with him. He was a great mentor for me, Martin Prickett, throughout my my younger days. And he was also a PE teacher at the school I was at. So got back in contact with Martin. He was really really open with me going into to Luton and assisting him with some work with the youth team, and had a couple of weeks there, which was brilliant in the professional environment. And a couple of months later, I was fortunate enough to be offered a full-time job, and stayed there for just over 10 years. So it was a really nice transition for me, really fortunate in the way it came about, and just lucky to work with so many really good practitioners and great people who have helped me develop along the way.
Brilliant. And so once you're in today, you talked there about having a full-time role down at Luton. How did that come about exactly, in terms of what role was that? Because, over the years, you said you spent 10 years. I'm assuming I went through various roles there. Obviously, when we first met, you was the head of coaching down at Luton.
Yeah.
Mind just talking to us about that journey a little bit, how you started off at Luton and how it built up to that point?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think at the time, yes, the rules around youth development were changing. And again, it was probably a timely, an opportune moment to get involved when the ECCC was being branded about and a lot of full-time roles in youth development were being created. So my first role was an amalgamation of roles, I suppose, of a bit of sports science work across the youth team and the first team. The club didn't have a sports scientist at the time back then in 2010. So that was, something that I kind of fell into. And then alongside that, there was, coaching roles were opening up in the academy program. So I had a dual role of sports science and physical development during the day, and then coaching across the age groups in the academy at the evening. And I suppose that was a real cornerstone of my own personal development, in that I was, I had access to a variety of different environments at the time where I could see so many highly experienced people work who could mentor and guide me. And I'm very grateful for that. So, a bit of a unique role and really fortunate, again, that I managed to pick that up at that moment in time.
Brilliant. And you touched on there, you refer back to that about having a dual role. And I'm sort of interested to know how much of a part that your degree and their experience in the sports science things eventually helped you out when you started actually coaching on a more consistent basis?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. It helped to a certain extent. Yes, I think would be my answer, in that I think having an understanding of scientific principles when you're coaching and working is advantageous. But I do think that it has its limitations. So you can't be, in my opinion, getting out there, getting loads of experience through trial and error, working in a variety of different environments, working with players from different backgrounds. There's a feel and a lot of intangibles to coaching around, how you develop relationships, how you communicate, that formal education doesn't give you. So I think it gave me a base and it gave me some understanding. It probably led to me leaving Loughborough asking more questions than I knew answers. But I'd like to think it gave me some theoretical understanding that I was then able to inform some of the work that I was doing. But by no means did it encompass, or was it all encompassing, probably should I say, the roles that I undertook at that moment in time.
Definitely. You touched on there about, leaving yourself with questions to, be answered essentially. But, if we look at that, surely that's only a good thing, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose if you're in a position where you're not continually questioning yourself and your practice, then you may be in not a great position for your own personal development. And we would probably demand that of the players and the people that we work with. So, I suppose having that intellectual curiosity is a good thing. And it helps you keep questioning yourself and challenging your methodologies to keep improving. So, absolutely. I think it's probably a mindset and an attitude that is favourable, even if sometimes it can drive you a bit a bit crazy when you're reflecting on some of the work that you've done.
Definitely. And I think it's that passion that coaches need, you know, to always want to do more and achieve, I guess, get more out of their sessions. And I think it is constantly asking those questions is going to be key. You know, certainly there's been times where I've left the sessions, you know, almost scratching my head, and I'm like, surely there's another way to do this, or there's a way to make this even better. But, you know, I just want to take you back to your time. You know, you started off initially, you know, you mentioned there an amalgamation of roles, part sports science, part coaching. Where did that journey start in terms of, was that in the foundation phase? Was that youth development phase? Or
yeah, so across the phases, yes, really, I was fortunate to get some exposure to working, across from the very youngest players and up to my day-to-day stuff with the youth team and some of the first team players. So I kind of saw the sports science and coaching element not as separate entities, and that really high-level practitioners in that field would be able to put on sessions that had physical outcomes for the players but didn't feel different to football. So that was, I suppose, again, accelerated maybe my own personal learning and development in that I was practicing stuff during the day that I could then use in the evening, and then vice versa, and working out, you know, what maybe worked better with younger players, what the older players liked, and trying to get loads of feedback. So yeah, I didn't personally see the roles as like really separate and different, if that makes sense, just that maybe the focus of, or the title was different, but essentially it's about improving people and improving players.
Definitely. And, you know, just on that, then how important do you think it is, what it was for you, and maybe if other coaches possibly looking to go into that, that you had experience knowing what it was looking like, I guess, at the entry level, and then knowing what it looked like on the top end of the academy system, in that, did that help you? You know, would you mind speaking to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it did. Seeing boys from as young as 6 and 7, right up to, you know, 18, 19, 20. So for my current role and my career now, I think it was beneficial. And then conversely, as I think the current model of seeing more expert coaches in the foundation phase, where we've got real specialists working with the very youngest players, is also a real positive move for youth development in this country. And that people aren't, you know, going down that traditional route of working with older players is better. And been fortunate enough to work with some outstanding foundation phase coaches who are just real experts in that niche area. So yeah, for me, it was beneficial in my current role, but I also appreciate that for certain people that they may have no interest in working outside of a certain phase. And I think that is also, you know, a really viable career option. And I've got, you know, massive respect for people who do that.
And, you know, just touched on there about, you know, not, I guess, essentially setting your sights on one particular phase. You know, there's plenty of coaches that will, you know, have ambitions of going straight into the youth development phase or straight into the professional development phase. And more often than not, you talk there about specialists as well in the foundation, but more often than not, the challenge is the financial aspect as well, isn't it? Because I think a lot of coaches, and I think just the way the system is set up, it almost, on the surface, looks as if financially you're better off if you're working with the older age groups. So for some people, where they could be specialists with the foundation phase, that could be, I guess, a deterrent factor in terms of that. But you talk there about specialists. How important is it that coaches do identify where they're maybe best placed and really pay attention to that? Obviously not completely forgetting and negating the fact that there is other circumstances, like I said, finances or long-term career paths that they might have ambitions on. But you might just talk into how, in terms of how, you know, certainly from your experience in, you know, working through the academy process and then obviously becoming a head of coaching, how important is it to really have people who are specialists in those roles?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely critical. I guess that for some people, yes, who are starting out, they might not know exactly where their skill set lies. So for, and look, I'm probably still in that bracket myself, in that, I might be stronger in some areas than others, and you flex and move with that. So I think for certain people, it will be trying to dip your toe across the phases and seeing if you take to a particular age group or your skill set is aligned with development of players of a certain age. And then for other people, they might have a real strong sense when they're starting out of, you know, I will be suited to phase X, Y, or Z, and that becomes a narrower focus for them. So I think look, expanding and getting a broad range of understanding and skill set is important, but knowing, you know, how much knowledge there is to be gleaned working with players of different age groups and the depth that courses like the Advanced Youth Award go into now, having experts who are have outstanding knowledge of players within the relevant, you know, the foundation phase, youth development phase and professional development phases is critical for having, you know, a really successful youth development programme.
Mm. You know, just touch on there about, you know, the Advanced Youth Award. Obviously, when the Youth Awards first came out, you know, in their, I guess, original format, there was a lot of, you know, debate around the controversy and the contradiction between, I guess, the traditional coaching pathway and the Youth Awards themselves. What was your experience like going through that? You know, I know certainly when I went through my Mod 1, Mod 2, I mean, I say thankfully because I did mine pretty much just after I started coaching. Did my Level 1, did my Module 1, Module 2 before I even did my Level 2. But soon after I did my Level 2, I was thinking, okay, well, some of the things that have been said on the Youth Award are very contradictory to how they maybe want you to coach on the traditional pathway. Obviously, as time's gone on, they've started, you know, they've merged everything together and create a real assimilation around the content within the courses. What would your advice be to those coaches who are maybe considering whether youth development is the pathway to go down, or those coaches who have maybe previously done the core coaching qualifications but haven't had an opportunity to do the youth awards in their current or pre-existing format?
Yeah, sure. I think first and foremost, as the inception of the Youth Awards was a fantastic move for coach education and coach development in this country. I may be speaking out of turn here. There were people far more knowledgeable than I who were behind putting them courses and programs of work together. Mm. The fact that they came from a real player-centered approach, where I suppose traditional coaching pathways were not that way. It was mainly about the practice design and what you delivered rather than how you delivered. So for me, that was a big shift in coach education and a real positive for access, you know, for coaches across the game as a whole. And more recently, the amalgamation of the Youth Award and the mainstream coaching badges. So, you know, having the Module 1 and 2 as part of the UEFA B, I think, is a real positive move again, in that you can't go exclusively down one route. So you're not picking up the what you're delivering about the how or vice versa. So I think that's been, again, a really fantastic development for coaches across the game, and would absolutely encourage anyone, even coaches who are working, you know, potentially in performance football or adult football, to go through that pathway. You know, essentially it's about people, and coaches work with people, and the Youth Awards undoubtedly give, you know, an insight from both a theoretical and a practical perspective into how we can function and work really well with people. So I think it's something that everyone should consider, regardless of the environment that they're working in.
And just on that, you know, you talked there about, you know, you're right, they have been, obviously they have been brought together as an amalgamation of that pathway, the Youth Award pathway and a traditional coaching pathway in that respect. But there's, you know, I've had a lot of conversations recently with people, coaches, and even, you know, members of the FA, where there's a lot of people coming on the courses now who are maybe feeling a bit frustrated at the fact that there's less emphasis, especially certainly from a tutor delivery perspective, around the technical corner. I think, you know, certainly when I was going through my pathway, working through the qualifications, and I'm sure it wasn't too different from yours, in that, you know, we were keen to get on the course so that we can really, you know, digest all that, you know, some of the technical and tactical content that will come with the courses, and seemingly that's not as prevalent as it used to be. So what would your advice be to those coaches who are maybe feeling, I guess, frustrated from that perspective, and potentially looking to gain that further knowledge? Because quite often, you know, some of the challenges at that level and is that they don't have that technical and tactical information.
Yeah, I think it's a real good area for debate. Yeah, that tacit learning of, you know, other coaches is a really crucial way of picking up and assimilating knowledge. And I know you've had Jeff on here in the past, who was one of the master coach educators at that, and I was really fortunate enough to go through some of my own coach development programs with Jeff and learn a lot in a short space of time. So I think it's probably all about the balance, and, you know, having a variety of options for coach education, where there is the, you know, the option to see some really highly experienced coaches work and get some insight into how they would deliver certain topics in certain environments. And then also the, you know, the option for people to express themselves and impart their own personalities and individualism on sessions, knowing that every environment is different and every set of, you know, players or groups that staff will be working with are different as well and will have their own individual needs. So I think it's, yeah, a brilliant area for debate, and a balance across the spectrum would probably be the most favourable way to go.
I just want to come back to your journey a little bit. Now, you know, obviously, you know, starting off at Luton, moving into, I guess, a role where you're working across the different phases. How long did that last, and when did it start to become a bit more, I guess, specific around what your role was?
Yeah, so I moved to Lincoln as last May, so just over a year ago now, to take up the post of academy manager. So it was I left Luton with a heavy heart. It was a fantastic club that, like I've alluded to earlier, I was, you know, I owe my career to the people who worked at that club. So, left with a heavy heart, but it was a role that was, you know, a really good opportunity for me personally. And it's a wide, you know, there's a wide scope of work to do, but something that I'm learning every day and trying to pick up new things and be the best that I can be in it. I'm still figuring it out, I have to be honest, and have good days and bad days, and much like coaching, try and speak to, you know, people who have a high level of experience at doing the role, because it is quite unique. But yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's a new challenge. I like to, you know, try and challenge myself as much as I can, and hopefully something that I can do well in.
Brilliant. You know, obviously you leaving your role at Luton as a head of coaching. What would you say are some of the key things that you did in that particular role that really helps you now prepare for this one in particular? And obviously prior to moving into a head of coaching role, what were some of the other roles that, you know, you kind of, I guess, you took on before you actually eventually became the head of coaching there?
Yeah, so I suppose after my initial time at Luton, kind of dual rolling across sports science and coaching, and then the ECCC came into full force with the revised youth development rule. So I took up the position of youth development phase lead coach in 2013 or 14, maybe around that time, working with the 12s to 16s as my first full-time coaching role. So that was another fantastic career development move for me. And we had a team of coaches at the time who were, again, highly experienced and some really good people. So, and then the biggest thing, I suppose, Yaz, within that, moving from that role into head of coaching for me at the time, was just listening to people. And trying to take in as much information as I could. So that was, yeah, the biggest, well, I don't know if that's advice, that might be the wrong word, but yeah, listening, watching, observing, trying to get round and, you know, accrue as much knowledge as I could off a variety of people across environments to make sure that I was, you know, an effective a practitioner as I could be.
And, you know, just talk there about, you know, being an effective practitioner. What were some of the key fundamentals that you felt that were, I guess, key to that in terms of over that time? You know, you've had your experience working at Luton over, you know, 10 years now, you say. Obviously, your time, you know, at university studying your degree, you know, throughout this time, you're starting to formulate what would be your stuff, you know, your philosophy based on your values and beliefs and how coaching should look and how player interaction should look and just player development in general. What were some of the key ingredients for you in terms of that aspect of things and what, you know, in your philosophy, and how challenging can it be at times, and how, and did you have any challenges in your journey where you felt that maybe some of your beliefs were contradictory to what were the club that you were working at was with? And that's not to say that they were right or you were wrong or vice versa. Did you have any challenges like that? And, you know, obviously alluding to what those key ingredients were first.
Yeah, absolutely. Plenty of challenges as across my career so far. I think the first part of that question was around my own personal philosophy, which changes or has changed, should I say, quite a lot. And again, like we spoke around at the start, I think you're probably in a healthy place if you're questioning that all the time and trying to continually learn and pick up new pieces of information. But there was definitely a big swing, probably after 2 or 3 years of coaching full time, where I kind of started to realize that it wasn't about necessarily what you were delivering and the team, and it was about people and individuals and how you could get the best out of everyone in a group setting. And that's something that I still aspire to try and be better at every day, getting to know each individual as well as possible. So you're almost earning the right to coach and influence that young person. I think that's kind of the base level, and certainly underpins a lot of the work that I do. That, you know, the information that we give to young people on the 3G or on the grass is only one part of it, but how we look after them holistically, how we speak to them when they turn up at the training ground, how we engage with them, you know, around match day, building them relationships, gives you a core and a fundamental right to work with that young player. So I think that's where I am personally at the moment, that, you know, provide high challenge, high support, and have, you know, really good, sound interpersonal relationships that allow you to do that. I think that the second part around challenges, we were again fortunate that we had a group of staff who worked in that manner and understood at Luton that the children came first and people wanted to do the best for them. And then, of course, look, the nuances of development, for whether that be for individual players, playing philosophy, coaching philosophy, that there was always, you know, healthy debate. And I think that, you know, having healthy debate is crucial, and challenging each other is crucial. And if, you know, you've got 20 coaches in a club and you all agree, you're probably only really hearing one coach's view. So that's probably dangerous. So having, you know, having the environment where people can challenge each other, feel free to speak up about their own ideas, their own experiences, and want to innovate and push things forward, again, is, you know, the epitome of a healthy development environment.
Definitely. And I think, you know, having that collaboration with other coaches, I think, is definitely key. I mean, certainly for my own sake, in my, you know, my journey, about, I think it was about 2016, really, where I was put in an environment where I'd have to build a team of coaches. And I think that's when it really kind of came to me, almost, actually, you've really got to understand how to work with different people, and you've got to understand what their skill sets are. And sometimes it's about letting people work within their strengths as well, even if it's in a different way to, I guess, getting to the outcome that you want to get to, even if it is in a different way than maybe you would go sure. about it. And it's about, you know, just putting that trust in one another sometimes. Just, you know, interested to know that, obviously, you know, through your time as a head of coaching, and obviously now as an academy manager, was there any situations where you maybe felt that you could see where, or you know, where you needed to get to with a certain, I guess, task, a group of players, or a set, or coach in that respect? But maybe they were very different in the way in which they wanted to get to that outcome.
Yes, would be the short answer. Absolutely. I think having, again, working with people, like you've alluded to there, with different views, will inevitably be a part of any development program where there are a larger number of staff working in there. And I think if you go too quickly with that, the danger is that you force your either your opinions or your ideas on people, and that can become a resentful process. So yeah. I think there are situations that you have to try and manage carefully, and it's a case of, you know, not going fast and going alone, but going at a pace where you can go together. And no different to players, as the rapport and relationship that you're building with them coaches will give you a fundamental base to challenge and try and influence. And for some people, there'll be relationships where it's really healthy. There's constant dialogue, constant debate, constant upskilling. It's a two-way process. I think in the head of coaching role, you have the ability to influence and upskill, but also you get a lot of influence and upskilling back when you work in an environment of good people. And then, yeah, you use the word there in, you know, your last pros around trust. You've got to trust your people. And ultimately, once you've had that dialogue and that challenge, then if you can provide that trust, I think you give people the platform to do their best work.
Definitely. And I think, obviously, you know, in the situation I describe about myself, and I was obviously fortunate enough to be able to recruit I guess, certain members of the staffing team there, where I could have a bit more of a, I guess, like I said, you know, recruit them and have a bit more of a decision as to whether this person is actually going to fit in. But that's not always the case, you know, and obviously certain, you know, in your role, you know, you're coming into a new club now, you know, there's people that are going to be there already. Some people you might not necessarily see, I guess, as ideal. I'm, you know, it's not saying there is anyone of that nature at all. But obviously, they're there and you kind of work with them. You might be talking to, you know, in terms of managing others, some of the strategies and, I guess, ways that you can go about maybe dealing with that sort of situation if it was to arise.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a really pertinent point that you raise around when you move into a new environment that has a large group of people in, there can be conflict with your own views or your own values. So I think the first thing to do is listen again and spend time getting to know people, not judge too quickly. I think in coaching there can be a real danger of, if you only get a little glimpse or a small window of what people are doing, you can make some rash judgments. So the first, again, I don't know if it's advice, that might be the wrong word, yes, but the first piece of guidance potentially would be to take your time, use your emotional intelligence, stay level emotionally and watch and get to know people. And sometimes you can be surprised on, you know, how good they can be or why they deliver or work in a certain way. And then, look, ultimately there has to be some level in a development program or a football club where, you know, people adhere to the similar values, similar vision, similar mission, and want to go in the same direction. And if you can't change the people, then you have to change the people, as the old adage goes. But I think, giving people chance, or a chance to achieve and show their skill set is really important first.
Definitely. I just want to come back to your role as it stands now, the academy manager. Would you mind just sharing with us what that looks like on a day-to-day?
Yeah, so it's a really wide-ranging role, from taking fiscal, having the fiscal responsibilities for the academy and budget management and human resource, I suppose, would be the overarching elements of it, and making sure that the program is successful and sustainable financially. And then, again, providing a platform, I think, to help support, develop people and help them do their best work. So if you can do that, I don't think it's possible, like we spoke around earlier, with coaches in different phases, to be an expert in absolutely everything. So it's getting a team of people who are suitably skilled to be able to deliver, you know, the outcomes of the program that you want to get to, and, you know, maybe set and provide a vision that people can, you know, can believe in and want to believe in and aspire to achieve around that. And then, trust them to go and do their best work.
Definitely. You know, and just in terms of that, you talked there about, you know, trusting them to do their best work. Is there any practices that you currently implement or have implemented in the past with, you know, previous roles, namely head of coaching role, where you can help coaches do some self-reflection? Because we talked about that piece around, you know, becoming a specialist in certain areas, and actually before you can do that, you need to maybe do some self-reflection and be aware of what your strengths and maybe areas for development may be, and then marry that up with, I guess, the key ingredients to, you know, to, I guess, achieve some sort of success depending on what the role looks like and what role and what phase that role may be in.
I think first of all, it's the importance of feedback in coaching is vital for anyone to, or probably anyone in any kind of endeavor to get better. And without, you know, constructive and clear feedback, it can be difficult sometimes as an individual to understand your own level of performance or identify blind spots and where you need to get better. So I think in any role, in any leadership role, having the ability to deliver high quality feedback is really important. And that goes, you know, that encompasses a wide variety of skills. So being able to depersonalize behaviors so that people don't necessarily see it as a criticism or take it in the wrong way, using models like, you know, RAG rating certain aspects of a coaching session. You may agree, some different models that you can pick up to make it a two-way process and buy into, you know, going on a learning journey are really key. So I think, yeah, first of all, providing high quality feedback is really important. Again, going back to what we spoke about with the players, it has to be underpinned by sound personal relationships, and you have to be credible. And without that, it's really difficult, as I think, to be able to feedback and then for it to be important or value to the person who's receiving it. Secondly, after that, you have to be at times willing to make yourself vulnerable and show people that, you know, you are still learning as well. And that's an authentic, you know, an authentic driver, that once you are in a space where you're not still learning and you're not on that journey that you want people to go on, then yeah, you're probably operating outside of the boundaries that you would want your own people to work in.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Definitely. Just on that, you know, talk there about that feedback piece. You know, one of the roles I've been working in over the last maybe couple of years now, I've been doing some tutoring for the FA with the level one, level two stuff, and big conversation that sometimes takes place on some of these courses is around that feedback, and just how honest, I guess, a coach educator or in your capacity, head of coaching as a senior role in the environment, how honest their feedback actually is, because in truth, there's a lot of coaches out there, not just coaches, just people in general, they don't take well to sometimes having honest feedback. Would you mind just talking to that a little bit in terms of some of the things that you think are crucial in terms of delivering that feedback, and beyond that, how important it is and what strategies and what questions maybe coaches could be asking themselves to help them develop a growth mindset to accepting that feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's a real two-way process. Yes, firstly, from the coach educator or coach developer, if you're delivering feedback, generally there's a kind of correlation between the rapport you will have with a person and the impact your feedback will have. So I think on course delivery, or whether you're in a club environment, getting to know that person really well at first will give you a good platform to work on. If you're aloof or distant and don't show an interest in that person, then my experience is it can be more difficult for that individual to take that feedback for what it is, which is, you know, generally 99% of the times with good intentions. And then also to use your human qualities to give feedback with an empathetic point of view. So people will be coming with a variety of levels of, you know, experience or knowledge, and really tailoring that to the individual and where they are in their journey, so that it gives them value without being too overbearing in any given environment. I think that would be the two key things from people giving feedback. And you make a great reference there to developing a growth mindset. Of course, you know, we know now that valuing effort and the ability to, you know, internalize and utilize feedback is key to the development of people in any given skill set. So for individuals who are receiving it, I think, you know, if I get criticized by, you know, people who are maybe senior to me, and look, I'm not saying all feedback will be critical, but certainly when you're receiving critical feedback, it's trying to develop a mindset that, you know, it's not personal, and you'd like to think it's generally coming from a good place. And if it is, then, you know, you can develop the resilience to deal with that and see it for what it is, which is to improve you as a person. And just, you know, depersonalizing the behavior. So it's the behavior you're feeding back on, or the element of the session you're feeding back on, not the values of the person. I think it's really important.
Definitely. you know, certainly I've been in situations where that feedback can sometimes be, you know, difficult to take on. Certainly when you feel like you haven't had, I guess, a clear build up and pathway to that being the feedback. You know, and with that, I want to now relate it back to players now. So certainly, you know, the conversation I've had recently with a few coaches, and it's an ongoing thing where we talk about the 6-week reviews, talk about the 12-week reviews, and going through the year, and essentially the players getting some form of, I guess, for lack of a better term, their own appraisals in that respect. But some of them are also left at the end of the season quite shocked with the decision if they're not kept on in that respect. I think a lot, you know, certainly from my experience, there's been a lot of times in those sorts of situations where coaches are maybe not as honest as they should be with the players and the parents. Would you mind just talking to that about whether you've had any experiences similar to that in the past where you feel that's been the case? And if so, you know, if there's any advice or guidance to maybe some coaches that are maybe going through similar situations in terms of how they might best approach that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, a really good area for debate, Yaz, for me, especially in the, you know, youth development in the pro game. And, you know, retain release will always be a part of that, I suppose, as a consequence of the model. And how we manage that as adults working with children is really, really important. The word you use there, honesty, I think is critical in this, that if you feedback with honesty and clarity as a, you know, on a consistent basis, then at least the message that you're giving comes from a good place. If you don't, I think that's where conflict can arise, when there's lack of clarity or the feedback is misrepresented or disingenuous for the young player. And look, with real young players, it's, you know, you do have to be careful and use your, you know, your empathy skills and your human, you know, your real human values to make sure it's delivered in the right way. And it can be tough. I think it's an area that coaches generally don't get formal training in, and the softer skills now around that are really, really important. And then the big bit of advice that I would suggest in, you know, player parent reviews, appraisals, meetings, is never to overpromise and then underdeliver. I think that creates a total lack of trust from a coach player relationship. So I think we've always got to be careful and flip that on his head to underpromise and then overdeliver. And no one ever minds, you know, getting more than they expected. But when you do the reverse, that then causes problems for not only individual relationships, but of course across the development program.
Definitely. I think, you know, just you touched on there about that feedback needs to be tailored almost for the, especially if it's a younger player. How much, you know, I'm not sure what the situation is down at Lincoln, and you know, I'm not sure what kind of work goes in at what went on at Luton rather. But I know there's a lot of clubs doing some very good work around building, I guess, almost an educational program for the parents themselves and helping their parents understand what role they could be playing in that development. And I guess making that extra effort to build those relationships with the parents, you know, so that there is a transparency in what's going on, not just on the field, but off the field as well. You know, are there any things that you guys are doing down at Lincoln at the moment that, you know, fall into line with that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, another great point around any development program, you have that triangle of relationships where it's coach, player and parent. And it would be remiss of us not to appreciate the influence that parents have on players, especially during the foundation phase and youth development phase age groups. So this recent period of time has been fantastic for that from us at Lincoln at the minute, where we've been able to get on Zoom calls and Microsoft Teams and the various technology that we all seem to have picked up pretty quickly and maintain and generate some new contact even with parents around the rationale of why we work in a certain way and why we feedback in a certain way. And, you know, getting them to understand the importance of individual learning plans and why we're trying to maybe play in a certain way that might not always win games, but we're trying to develop certain areas. And then it just enables that triangle to be joined up rather than it being, you know, coach to player and then the parent coming from a, you know, really left field from a totally different angle. So I think that the more we can keep that triad of, you know, people on the same page and having real clarity in the development process is really important. And something that we've probably got to look to continue to do better at, because parents ultimately spend, you know, far more time with the young people than we do as coaches. And look, we'll have a bigger influence on them. We're probably naive if we think as coaches we have a bigger influence on young people than their parents. I would challenge that notion and suggest that we don't. So I think, yeah, parent education is an absolutely vital part of the process.
Brilliant. Just to kind of move things on a little bit now, you know, I just want to come back to you, obviously, your personal journey. I just wanted to know, within your, you know, your observation, your time in the game, what would you say your biggest bugbear has been when it comes to coaching?
Oof. I think the...
We've all them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's to try and pick one is maybe difficult, but I think for coaches of certainly in youth development who are in it without putting the player first is criminal, really. That's probably my biggest, something that I find difficult to understand. I'm really fortunate. It's been a rare occurrence in, you know, the environments that I've worked in. So I'm fortunate, I suppose, from that perspective. But yeah, look, the idea, or I suppose the essence of coaching, is that we're trying to improve and develop someone else. So it's about stepping or taking yourself out of the limelight and making sure we're working with the other people in mind. And yeah, for the few people who don't do that, then of course that's really disappointing to see.
Definitely. And just on that then, you know, is it some of your bugbears? What would you say some of the positive and key behaviours that you've definitely seen in your experience? And is there any standout moments where you thought that coach has done that and that was really good? That was really brilliant. It's something I'm going to take forward and apply for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really fortunate to work with some fantastic people at the moment at Lincoln City. And we went to Germany, as in January, so just before coronavirus took hold, and I was fortunate enough to attend that tournament with our under-9s and our foundation phase lead coach, Lee Moran. And the way he constructed a weekend, not just around the football and the tournament, but personal and life skill development for the boys was outstanding. It was something that I came back on the plane home on the Monday afternoon and wrote copious notes around the way Lee interacted, engaged the boys, not just in, in terms of life skills and personal development and the football, but the way he kind of interacted and put all of them elements together to involve the players in the planning, the process, how we were going to play at such a young age was fantastic. And yeah, that's something that really, you know, it hit home with me around having access to players for a longer period of time. And, you know, loads of examples from across the years. Ross O'Kane, the foundation phase league coach at Luton, fantastic player developer. James Townsend, the youth development phase league coach at Luton. Ash Foyle at Lincoln. So I've been really fortunate just to work with some outstanding people. And yeah, I'd probably take up far too much of your time if I had to go through every single one. Yeah. But yeah, really grateful to have had the opportunity to work with people like that.
You talked there about some of the positives, obviously working with great coaches and having, you know, exposure, you know, directly to some of the great I guess, strategies and, you know, some of the practices that they kind of carry through. Just in contrast to that, what would you say is one of the, you know, what has been one of the biggest challenges in your coaching journey? And, you know, if you've been able to, how have you gone about dealing with it? And if you haven't yet, then, you know, what would you say is your plan to go ahead and try and conquer that?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges is probably trying to admit and realise how bad I was when I first started out. That's a pretty harrowing process to go through as you accumulate more knowledge. So I look back now on when I first started and cringe a little bit with what and how I would have delivered to the players. So looking in the mirror and being honest with yourself in that is, can be tough sometimes to realise that you were actually really, really bad at one point. And yeah, look, maybe I still am, I don't know, but I definitely, hopefully I'm a little bit better than I once was. So that's tough. And then, maybe not a challenge from a coaching perspective, but something that I find really difficult is, or maybe upsetting at times, is when young people don't fulfill their potential because of, you know, whether that's their mentality or attitude or I fail to have, you know, the requisite amount of influence on them as a person to help them do that. I always find that the most the toughest thing to deal with in the development process.
I think you sort of talk there about, you know, young people and the mentality and attitude. Do you feel that's something that you can actually coach, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Really strongly about that. I think you absolutely can affect the mindset of young people. It takes time, it takes energy, it takes persistence, and it takes an environment that almost necessitates people will develop that area of themselves and will act in a certain way. So I think you can. I don't think it's easy. I think it's probably the hardest but most powerful part of a development journey, knowing how important, you know, core psychological values are in elite performance and high performance in any endeavor. But certain is the wrong word, because I don't think you can be certain of anything, but I'm very of the opinion that you can develop growth mindset, you can develop grit, you can develop resilience, you can get boys to aspire to high standards and high behaviors. Absolutely.
Definitely. I mean, I agree. I was just asking the question just to get your thoughts on it, but more so, you know, something, an interesting point that you alluded to there, and I was hoping that you would, was talking about the actual environment itself and having an environment that actually sets that as almost one of the outcome goals. And why I'm glad you brought that up, because I think there's a lot of environments in particular, certainly people look at it from the outside in and say that some of the academy environments are almost stop players, and, you know, they're not really on the surface of things. There's conversations I've had with plenty of people, and they say they don't really support the players as much as they should, you know, because there's so many players out there, they can just drop this one and pick up another one, if that makes sense. But, you know, I think it's definitely you know, important that the environment is the right one, and that they are looking to maybe not just support the player on as a footballer, but as a person. And I think, you know, if you can have that impact, and you touched on there, develop that mindset, whether that be leading them into a long-term professional football career or not, I think ultimately the underlying thing for me and the backdrop of everything is, can we develop this individual to become a more confident and positive member of society in its whole.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And ultimately, as for me, you know, better people who have a better attitude and driven attitude to education and self-improvement will ultimately end up being better players anyway. So I don't think separating the two sometimes. Sometimes we view it as like a dichotomy. You can do one or the other, like develop the player, develop the person. But ultimately, it's about doing both at the same time, and they go hand in hand. So I think it's a great point.
Now, on that, though, have you ever had any individuals where maybe you've had to completely change your approach because they present you with some different problems or different challenges, shall I say, that you don't usually come across, but you know that actually we're going to have to handle this one differently because there's something that we can unlock in some respects?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's quite a few boys across the years I've been fortunate enough to work with who, whether maverick's the right terminology or outlier, who have been very unique individuals in their own way, but very talented boys. Certainly didn't get it right a lot of the time. I think it would be remiss to mention them in person because some of them are still young people, but it's an area that, again, I think is under-researched and perhaps not fully understood in terms of how we deal with people who either have, you know, different goals, different aspirations, behave in different ways, but are talented young people. So I can't really provide any concrete answers. I think it's something I'm still trying to learn and develop all the time. But certainly I've had the opportunity and been fortunate to try and work and develop and improve them players. So, yeah.
Definitely. You talk there obviously about, you know, players ultimately will get better if they have that learning mindset and what have the, you know, that thirst to gather to develop in respect. So coming back to yourself now, you know, you mentioned Martin Prickett there. I was just wondering, interestingly enough, if you've had any other major influences in your journey and, you know, what are some of the biggest lessons you've taken from them?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I'd take up far too much of your time going through everyone who's been kind enough to donate some of their time to help me improve.
So let's narrow it down then. Let's say if you had to pick two key lessons that you've learned from, I guess, someone formally or informally, because, you know, there's a lot of informal, mentors in that respect, and knowing that it's not a formal relationship, it's probably just through a friendship or just a peer of some sort, where you've really taken away a key message. And, you know, I think a lot of people as well need to understand that sometimes it's not just someone who's maybe necessarily older than you or maybe more experienced in your field. It's just, even through life experiences, some lessons can be transferable in that respect. What would you say two key lessons that you've kind of taken on board, or two that might stand out for you as very crucial?
Yeah, absolutely. I like it. As you're challenging me now, I thought this is going to be an easy ride, and you're not going to let me get away scot-free. The first one, if I was to be pushed for two, would be Greg Broughton. So Greg Broughton was the academy manager at Luton when I first started. Fantastic leader, human qualities through the roof. And the biggest thing I think that Greg did for me and my own personal development was he just trusted me. So he trusted me to go into different environments across the academy and work and improve and, you know, be able to go through a trial and error process, not through a try and I'm going to critique you, you know, constantly. And when you did mess things up, it was like a guiding hand and a guiding path. So Greg would absolutely be, one of the people in my career have helped me, you know, an inordinate amount.
And just on that, though, before you go on to the second one, you know, you talk there about that trust in you. Now, that's not necessarily something that you can go to another individual or even Greg in that instance and say, Greg, you're going to have to trust me, or Greg, I need your trust. That's something, obviously, that has to come from them. Now, what would you say to maybe those coaches or anyone listening to this that might be in a position where they need that superior person in the chain or that senior figure to put the trust in them, but they haven't quite got it yet, or they don't feel like they've got it yet?
Sure. Again, really good question. So I think if you're working with someone who is stifling your own personal development, or you haven't got an optimal environment where you can go through that trial and error process, trying to influence upwards, if that's the right word, I'm not a hierarchical person, but if you're trying to influence upwards, that is a really difficult skill and something that I absolutely appreciate can be tough for people to navigate. I think, again, my biggest bit of advice would be to listen and listen intently, and then try and slowly start to bridge the areas of whether it's non-compliance or things that, you know, superiors think you should get better at, and try and think in their terms. So why is that person asking me to do this? And then slowly but surely, over a period of time, you can generate and develop a relationship that becomes mutually beneficial rather than directive.
Definitely. And you know, just, you know, without letting you get away scot-free, you had a second person in mind, didn't you?
Yeah, I did indeed. So the second person, as I think, would be Sir Paul Grant. So I've been really fortunate over the last 3 or 4 years in conjunction with the development programs that have been rolled out by the Premier League to work with Sir Paul as my personal mentor, who's been fantastic. So Sir Paul was a head teacher in East London for 17, 18 years and turned a failing school into an elite high-performing school. And his knowledge of human development and leadership has helped me immeasurably develop my softer skills. So emotional intelligence, the way I communicate with people. And it's something I'm still trying to get better at all the time. But support has just been a real guiding hand for me at times when I've needed some support.
And just in terms, you talked there about the soft skills, and you know that emotional intelligence is real. It is a real, I guess, a game changer if you can get that right. How do you go about developing that? You know, is there any strategies that you've, I guess, picked up? And you know, you talked about the Premier League program. I'm assuming that you're maybe referring to the head of coaching, the elite head of coaching program. Is that correct? Or maybe the academy manager program?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had 3 years on the head of coaching program, and then transferred to EM last May. So
sure. And just, you know, going through that process, and what would you say some of the key strategies and methodologies are behind maybe going about developing those softer skills, and, you know, in particularly with that emotional intelligence piece?
Yeah, I think developing emotional intelligence is difficult. It takes time. Some of the stuff around that Steve Peters put out, I suppose, a couple of years ago with, you know, managing the chimp resonated quite a lot with me. And, you know, making sure that you don't act on impulse and giving yourself time to breathe. You know, ultimately, football is quite an emotional game, and we can make erratic decisions at times, whether that's you know, when we're coaching in the moment. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who, you know, tune into your program here who will think around their, you know, when they're coaching in an emotional state in a game where they've maybe criticized or been dismissive of a certain behavior or certain action, and then on reflection after the game I'd wish they hadn't have done it. And, you know, I'd certainly fall into that bracket. So that kind of understanding why your brain or why your mind thinks certain things and being able to control that, I think, is a good starting place. And then understanding some models across the psychological, the psychological spectrum and performance management can help, undoubtedly. And it's something that, still try and develop every day and work on, you know, communicating in the most effective way possible and depersonalizing and removing emotion at the right time, which can be difficult to do.
Definitely. And I think, like you say, it is a skill that is, it is a soft skill, and it certainly can take time to develop. It's not something that you're strong at right at this moment in time. But I don't think by any means it should be underestimated how powerful that can be in terms of not just player or talent development, just as a human being in general.
Absolutely.
Now, obviously, as we start to wind down, I just wanted to kind of take you back to the start of your journey. Now, you know, you finish your degree, going into, I guess, coaching with more of a, shall we say, a more intentional mindset. Knowing what you know now, if you could go back and speak to Jordan McCann back then, what would your message be to him?
Calm down and realise you're not very good, I suppose, would be the first point. And I suppose to broaden horizons. I think when I first started, as I was quite narrow-minded, and I thought that the knowledge that I'd assimilated from my time in academia was like concrete, like this was how it should be done. There's research in this area.
Do you have an example of an instance that occurred where you could think back to and think, like, do you know what, I was really stubborn and I guess dismissive in that moment?
Yeah, so I think there, coming out of university, there was quite a lot of scientific like rationale at the time, or theory around practice design. So Whole Part Whole was, as you'll probably know better than I, was coming out in the youth modules.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, you know, transference of learning from practice to game. And I was like, right, that's brilliant. This is the way. This is how it's got to be done, without necessarily realizing that, you know, a balanced approach and recognizing that all individuals have really specific needs, rather than like, right, that science says this, that is applicable to everyone, let's go and do it that way. So I think at that moment in time, I was science driven because I had accrued quite a bit of knowledge, or some knowledge, over a 3-year period, and then realized over the years that science is good, but if you don't have the art and can't deliver it in an artistic way, then you might as well give up. So I think that would be the biggest thing. Just stay open-minded, keep learning, you know, speak to as many people who have got significantly more experience than you have, and realize and then be adaptable to that. I think it's probably the most important thing. I think sometimes the hardest thing when you're a coach or have been a coach for a long time in one environment is to change your opinion, because it can be a sign of weakness. I don't know if that makes sense, yes, to you or resonates, but that can be a tough skill to do. And I think I didn't do that as early as I could have.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that bit that you talked there about a sign of weakness, I think if one thing that I've learned in my coaching journey is, in order to become better, you need to make yourself vulnerable. And I think sometimes vulnerability can look at, can come across as a sign of weakness. I mean, I've certainly had situations with my players in the past where, you know, I'll be open and honest with them. I'll say, look, lads, we're going to try this today. I've never tried this. This is what I'm hoping is going to happen. Let's see what actually happens. And I think that vulnerability and that honesty, you know, that allowing, you know, being brave enough to do that, can sometimes bring down any barriers the players may put up in terms of critiquing what's going on. But then it's almost like you're inviting them into the process. And I think it becomes a more collaborative approach in that respect. And, you know, something that you touched on earlier about when the youth awards came in, there was this emphasis around it being player centered. But I think there's, you know, something else, you know, that I just want to touch on is that there's a quite a confusion at times around being player centered and player led. sometimes it can be coach, you know, it absolutely can be coach led but player centered, and vice versa. It could be fully player led as well as being player centered, asking them to reflect. But I think that piece about wanting to develop and I guess showing it a sign of weakness that any coach is listening to, certainly from my perspective, I think the weakness is in not changing rather than actually being open to the change.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that's, alluding to that is I wasn't in that place, early on in my career. And that's something that, it took time to develop. And I couldn't agree more that being of that mindset is a really healthy place to be.
Definitely. So, almost, I guess, 12 years now in working in, I guess, the academy side of things.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You know, you've gone through various roles, starting off, sports science, moving into, I guess, just regular coaching roles and eventually into head of coaching. Now, academy manager, 12 years on. What's next for Jordan McCann?
Yeah, I think at the minute, I'm obviously pretty new into post at Lincoln. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time at the club. And for me at the moment, it's about consolidating the learning that I've put in place over the last year and being the best I can be in my current role. So we spoke briefly there around the Premier League development programs. They've been fantastic for me. Fortunate enough again to have access to some really good people and academy managers across the country with significant experience. So that gives me a chance to keep learning, keep developing, keep progressing and hopefully be as good as I can in the role I'm in at the moment.
Brilliant. Now, I'm going to get an answer out of you on this one. Let's go scot-free for this. 60 seconds. If I was to give you 60 seconds now and I wanted you to leave listeners with one golden nugget, what would that be, Jordan?
So for me, it would be, and we've spoken about it quite a bit in the past hour, would be just to remain open-minded and curious. I think it's having that proficiency to always want to learn, always want to get better, and not dismissing things too easily or being too set in your ways is absolutely crucial for the development of you as a coach or in any endeavour that people have in their lives. So I think, without that, and I was certainly very, very guilty of that, if you are too narrow-minded and not willing to, broaden horizons, keep searching for new ways to learn, not just formal, but informal as well. So, reading podcasts like this and picking up little nuggets all the time off different people, then you probably won't get to be as good as you can be. So that would be that'd be my biggest bit of advice.
Brilliant. Just one final question for you. It might challenge you a little bit, but you touched on there, just going into you just recently come into the post as academy manager, so I guess you want to find your feet in that role a little bit and really explore what that looks like for you in the immediate term. But if we now, I guess, look ahead, maybe 20, 30, maybe in 40 years when you, starting to wind down on your career, finally retiring from the game, what would you want your legacy to be?
Yeah, I think if I'm still alive in 40 years, that'll be goal number one. I think for me, as I'd like to think, even so far in, the short time I've been fortunate enough to work in, in youth development and work with some fantastic people, that the boys that I've had the opportunity to coach and the staff that I've had the opportunity to work with would always say that I had their best interests at heart and I gave, my all to help them be as good as they can be. That would be something that, would really resonate with me and something that I would like to be remembered for my coaching, that I helped people to fulfill their potential and done that in a real genuine manner.
Brilliant. And I think that sometimes it often is just a little moments of gratitude. And I guess, it might be a player that you've coached in the past, give you a call just to check in on you, or that you see, even just seeing that a player's done well and you've had a positive impact, especially we talked earlier about, those Mavericks, as you put it, who might be going through troubled personal lives and whatnot, or have bring their own challenges even. And then, just to go and see that they might, even if they haven't made a game, a career of in the professional game, they've gone on to, become good people and develop a better life for themselves. And I think that can be so rewarding for, not just coaches, but, like I said, we're not, it's not just football players that we're developing, but developing talent, supporting the development of talent rather, but ultimately we're helping to develop people for society to go out into the world of, I guess, every day. So I think that's definitely, you know, that bit there about wanting to do it with a genuine intent as well, I think is really crucial. And I think that hopefully for any of your players that might be listening to, any coaches that you worked with in the past that you might be listening to this, or even current coaches, that is hopefully, you know, when you do part ways in whichever way you do, that is what you will be remembered for. But a very special thanks today for our guest, Jordan McCann, Lincoln City Academy Manager.
Thanks, Yaz. Thanks for having us. Much appreciated.
Now, guys, get in touch. Let us know your thoughts, what your key takeaways were from today. And just on that note, Jordan, do you have any social media handles that you'd be happy for the listeners to get in touch on?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I'm not generally a massive social media person, but I'm on Twitter, on at Jordan, I think it's _ McCann. So yeah, please do feel free to get in touch, and it'd be great to hear from a few people and get some feedback in through coaching style.
Brilliant.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another edition of the Coaches Network Insight Series, where we sit down with experienced individuals across the multiple disciplines within the coaching world, hoping to explore their journeys and key insights in order to package away some golden nuggets that you can apply to help you reach your full potential. I've no doubt that you've enjoyed today's episode as much as we have, but I just want to say thanks again for tuning in. The support is much appreciated. Please do get in touch with us and today's guests. Let us know where you're listening from to share your thoughts, views and key takeaways from today's show, along with any suggestions you may have for guests or future topics on the show that you'd like to hear discussed. Ultimately, guys, the show is about yourselves. The content is for you, and we just want to continue to create that great content. On that note, get in touch with us on Instagram at The Coaches Network and on Twitter at The Coaches Net. And if you want to touch base with Coach Ben, he's available on Instagram and Twitter at FocusBXN. Lastly, guys, keep an eye out on our socials for the latest updates and announcements for upcoming guests and discussion topics with the panel. And until next time, guys, take care.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.